Hi, this is Pastor Mike from the Gospel Church. You're listening to our podcast. It's my hope that as you listen to it, that you'll fall deeply in love with Jesus and that you trust him with every part of your life. Thanks for listening.
All right, today we're in Genesis, continuing our study of forefathers, continuing to study the life of Abraham as he follows God. And right now, as we're looking at the early stories of Abraham's life, he's not even called Abraham yet. His name is Abram. And we're going to be walking through a very normal story of conflict today. We're looking at a story of conflict, of how he overcomes conflict. We're going to see some keys to conflict. Now, anybody in the room like conflict? Raise your hand. Okay, Donovan, the only person, right? Everybody else, you don't. Just, and that's normal. Like when I see conflict happening in my life, there's something that in me just kind of just like, I don't really... I mean, I can do it, and I'm okay at it, I just don't like it, right? So, especially when somebody says, hey man, can we have a meeting? And just afterwards, and you say, what's it about? They're like, I'll just tell you later. There's something within you that goes, you start running through like a list, like, did I say something weird? Did I do something, you know? You've been there, right? Right? It's been this moment where you're like, there's this conflict, I just feel weird about this. And I don't know how to move through it. Today, I hope that we would see some very clear ways to overcome conflict. And the reason why we're focusing on this is because the Bible often is very, very practical and redeems the everyday. So today is going to be one of those messages where we'll see the gospel at play, but it's also going to be something that'll help us put everything in our life in full submission to Jesus Christ. We'll redeem the everyday areas of our life. But today, we're focusing on conflict. So, let's look in Genesis chapter 13, verse 1. It says this, Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev, he, his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him. Abram was very rich in livestock, silver and gold. He went by stages from the Negev to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had formerly been, to the site where he had built the altar. And Abram called on the name of the Lord there. Now Lot, who was traveling with Abram, also had flocks, herds, and tents, not jets. That hadn't been invented yet. that's good, right? All right. But the land was unable to support them as long as they stayed together, for they had so many possessions that they could not stay together. And there were quarreling between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. At that time, the Canaanites and Perizzites were living in the land. So our story picks up here. Abram and Lot, they're related. They have conflict between them, so that makes it extra weird, right? Family drama is the worst kind of drama. And the drama here is that they're both so successful that their respective people that work for them start having like this feud. It's almost like a turf war, right? There's like gangs, like the Sharks and the Jets. They're like coming out, they're snapping at each other. Like, hey, you know, this is our watering holes. You can't get in on it. And they having conflict because they're both so rich. They have so much cattle and so much livestock that they are unable to support themselves off the land. And conflict comes to every single one of us. Sometimes it comes through like bad things that happen. Sometimes conflict can happen from very good things, right? Sometimes you have conflict as you're doing your job and just living your life and being successful. You can find yourself to be somebody who's in conflict with someone that you love. And that's really hard. I remember having a moment of conflict like this when I was very early in ministry. My first job was being a youth pastor at a church called Salem Baptist in Minnesota. I was just actually in a moment where it was a transitional moment for me. I'd finished college. I was going to go to seminary, had a year between the two, started serving at this church as an interim youth pastor. And there were two of us who were interim youth pastors, myself and a guy named Jason. And Jason and I, they split up the youth group between us. I had the junior high at first, and then Jason had the senior high. But the kind of catch was is that Jason was going to go work at a summer camp that summer, and I was going to have the whole youth group by myself that summer. And so I was looking forward to that. We were both stretching our wings in ministry, and so summer came, Jason went off to camp, and I was like, sweet, I get to run this whole thing. So for 2 whole weeks, I was like leading the entire youth group. It was about 100 kids total, and I was just like, man, I'm just like, just really kind of like flying here. And all of a sudden, things kind of came to an awkward pause because Jason came back from camp. And the reason he came back is because he loved doing the youth work and he didn't want to leave, and he came back. And so I remember having hard conversations with other leaders there saying, hey, what are we going to do? And I remember one pastor who's quite a bit older was like, you should like let him run things the way they were before and step back. And my heart was like so set on leading both junior high and youth, because I love junior high students, but man, I'm just telling you, like, this is a whole level of hormones that I wasn't really ready to go through. And I was like, man, I love more of the teaching. And there's like all this stuff kind of coming in place. And there was this conflict that happened off very good things, right? Love for students, ministry. And I was at a place where I didn't really know how to handle that. And you may feel the same way. There are areas in your life where you're like, I'm feeling conflict, deep conflict with people. I don't know how to overcome it. And here Abraham is going to show us a picture of what it looks like to overcome this kind of conflict. So let's look in Genesis 13, verse 8. Okay, so we're going to continue our story. It says, so Abram said to Lot, please, let's not have quarreling between you and me, or between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, since we are relatives. Isn't the whole land before you? Separate from me. If you go to the left, I will go to the right. If you go to the right, I will go to the left. And here we find the first key to conflict, and that is to pursue peace. To pursue peace. Abram pursues peace. He says, let's not fight. And he does something very interesting here. He's very humble, and he elevates Lot to a position of Lot being an equal, which he wasn't. Lot was his younger cousin. Abraham is the patriarch of the family. And these dynamics were very important to this culture, and they're very key to maintaining order. And Abraham lowers himself and elevates Lot by coming to him, and he gives him the choice of where to go, which, don't miss this, God had told Abram that everything in Canaan was his. Everything. The promise for you and your family. And Abram pursues peace to the point that he's willing to give up half of whatever God has given him. See, peace doesn't just happen. You have to pursue it. Sometimes we think about peace, we're like, okay, it's just the absence of conflict, and it's just going to happen if everybody just kind of like plays nice together. But that's not necessarily true. Peace doesn't just happen on its own, spontaneously. You have to pursue peace. And Abram does that. He pursues peace with his nephew, Lot. And in this moment, he prefigures Christ. The word prefiguring is a key theological term. People talk about this in the Bible when they look at the Old Testament, that really the entire Bible is really about Jesus. Every page ultimately is tied to the meta-narrative of God creating the world perfect, mankind falling and sinning, then Christ comes to provide redemption and fully, at one point in the future, will fully restore all things to himself. And every part of the scriptures can point us to Jesus Christ. And here we find Abram pointing to the coming Messiah, to Jesus in his pursuit of peace. Because what we know about Jesus, according to Isaiah, is that he is the Prince of Peace. Prince doesn't mean like he's like, you know, not ultimately king. In biblical language, the word prince is interchangeable with king. Jesus is the one who rules with peace. And this idea of God being a God of peace is found throughout the Bible. Paul calls God the God of peace over five times in his letters as he closes them out. He goes, hey, may the God of peace guard your hearts. This is what God is about. He is about making peace. And when we pursue peace, what we're doing is we're revealing who we really follow. When Jesus gave the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says this. He says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. This phrase peacemaker is beautiful. It means it's someone who goes and makes peace, takes the initiative. It's not just peace liver, someone who lives in peace, or someone who receives peace, but somebody who goes and makes peace. And what Jesus says is that when they do that, people will call them sons of God. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean offspring of God. Like a lot of times we think of sons, we think biology, right? Descendants. In Hebrew culture, To call someone the son of somebody, it means that you have their very same attributes. So you sometimes call somebody that they're the son of something just to show like what they're like. Jesus had two disciples, notably called the sons of thunder, James and John. Their real dad was a guy named Zebedee, okay? But everybody called them the sons of thunder, probably because they were so loud and disruptive, right? I mean, they're like, you're just like thunder. Last night we heard a lot of thunder, right? And here we find Jesus saying, you will be called sons of God. You will look just like your daddy. When you make peace, you give people a picture of what God is like by the way you live your life. Secondly, not only do we pursue peace, but we need to own an abundance mentality. Let's look with me in verse 10. Go back to the text. It says, Lot looked out and saw that the entire plain of the Jordan as far as Zoar was well watered and everywhere like the Lord's garden and the land of Egypt. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose the entire plain of the Jordan for himself. And then Lot journeyed eastward and they were separated from each other. What you find here is you find Lot looking out from where they're standing. They're probably standing up upon a ridge or a mountainside. And he looks out and says, okay, the best part of the land is the land next to the Jordan River. And the description of it is that it is like Eden. It's like as lush as Eden or like the land of Egypt along the River Nile. It is beautiful. It's the choice land. It's the best spot. And Lot chooses it for himself. And Abraham is cool with that, which is amazing, right? Can you imagine me like, hey, listen, let's choose. And Lot's like, I'm going to choose the best for myself. It's like taking somebody to dinner or lunch and you're like, hey, go eat. And you got a limited budget, but you're like, I'm going to bless you. And they're like, I'll take the swordfish and the filet. You're like, both of them? Okay. Is that what we're doing? Bold move, right? And Lot's like, I'm going to take the best part for myself. And Abram allows this to happen, encourages it to happen, pursues it to happen. Why? Because he has an abundance mentality. Abram believes that there's enough for both of them. He does not see the world as a zero-sum game where if I lose something, then you gain something, or if you gain something, then I automatically lose something. He does not see the world in a win-lose proposition. He sees the world as a blue ocean. There is so much out there for both of us. Man, a lot of our relationships probably could thrive a lot more if we had an abundance mentality, where it's not like, hey, when somebody is doing well, then I'm automatically failing or losing. And in a world where we're constantly comparing ourselves to the people around us, we're constantly comparing ourselves to people on Instagram and Facebook, and when we're constantly comparing ourselves to our peers, our friends, we're kind of keeping score mentally. Have you ever done this, right? You like look at the people you graduated with, like how far along am I compared to them? How are my brothers or sisters doing compared to me? We constantly do this. It's exhausting. And it's unrealistic because every single one of us has our own story. And if we're going to be people that really are able to overcome conflict, we need to have an abundance mentality. There's enough for everyone. And the third thing we'll find today is that Abram does something significant. He pursues God instead of earth. Abram pursues God instead of earth. There's a contrast between these two men, between Abram and Lot. One pursues God, the other pursues earth. One pursues God, the giver of good things, the giver of gifts, and the other one pursues just the gifts themselves. We see that here as we continue our text. Look with me in verse 12. I'm sorry, let's go back to verse 11. It says, so Lot chose the entire plain of Jordan for himself. Then Lot journeyed eastward. And they were separated from each other. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, but Lot lived in the cities on the plain and set up his tent near Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were evil, sinning immensely before the Lord. What we find here is we find that Lot pursues comfort, and he pursues proximity to immorality. Even though he chose what was more appealing to the eye, what seemed like the easier path and the better of the two, he chooses something that grieves God's heart, and he chooses to live in proximity to Sodom, that notorious city that God later destroys. John Calvin said that Lot saw the valley as Eden, as heaven, but nearly plunged himself into hell. Sometimes what we see as appealing can be so close to evil that we overestimate our ability and our capacity to elevate the conversation or overcome evil, and instead we are corrupted by it. And Lot chooses to go to the place that seemed best to him, but all it does is bring him heartache and pain. And in the end, he loses everything. So sometimes pursuing earth may seem like the more appealing option because we're materialistic people. Materialism is the god of our age. By materialism, let me just define it. It's not just wanting stuff or things. It's living like there's nothing spiritual around us. It's living for the things of earth. Say, my hope is only here. And it's so hard for us not to be materialistic. Not saying I need cool jeans or a new car. That's part of materialism. But materialism ultimately says is that everything that matters and all that I can believe in is here now. It's material. It's physical. When we do that, we punt on all the things that really do last, which is the things that matter most, spiritual things. And when we pursue only the material, what we find is that it will never truly satisfy. We're trying to fill ourselves with it and never actually satisfy us. And here Abraham does something different. He pursues God and God's favor rather than earth. Look with me in verse 14. Go back to our text. It says, after Lot had separated from him, the Lord said to Abram, look from this place where you are, look north and south, east and west, for I will give you and your offspring forever all the land that you see. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust of the earth, then your offspring could be counted. Get up and walk around the land through its length and width, for I will give it to you. So Abram moved his tent and went to live in the oaks of Mamre at Hebron, where he built an altar to the Lord. God shows up to Abraham after this choice. And he says, look north, south, east, west. It's all yours. And I'm not just going to give it to you. I'm going to fill it with your offspring, with your descendants. And now as Christians, we also understand that this is also for the church, believers. He's going to have a group of people who will come from him, both spiritually and physically, that will fill the earth. It'll be his. And God rewards Abram because Abram first seeks God's face instead of his hand. By that I mean he seeks God's presence rather than God's stuff. And then ultimately he's rewarded with more than he could ever imagine. But it starts with his desire to seek God's face, and his blessing is not just more things. He already has all the things he could ever want. The blessing's on him, okay? But what he receives is something deeper. He receives an alliance with God where God blesses all people through him. And you are in this promise. Like you sitting right here in this church right now, think about this. You're part of the promise that God gave Abraham, that he would bless all nations through him. And God blesses Abraham in an incredible way and gives him a blessing to be generous. Now, I think all of this is tied to a secret. There's a deep secret we need to know as believers. You guys want to hear the secret? Right? You're like, secrets, I'm down. Show me the secret. Here's the secret Abraham knew that undergirded everything, that allowed him to pursue peace, that allowed him to own an abundance mentality, that allowed him to pursue God instead of earth. You know what the secret was? The secret is this. It's all God's. It's all God's. It's all God's. Everything. Abraham is God's. The land is God's. The valley of the river Jordan was God's. Lot was God's. All of it belongs to God. It is not Abram's to control or own. It is God's. And that allows him to say, Lot, you can pick. Why? Because ultimately it's God's. God made me a promise, and I'm going to trust that he'll fulfill it in ways I can't imagine. It's yours. And God, you can do whatever you want with me. And I'm willing to live open-handed. Even if you want to give the best parts of this to Lot, I'm okay with it because ultimately it's all yours anyway. It was never mine to begin with. That's the way he's able to be generous with what he has. Why? Because he believes that it's all God's. And the reality is every single one of us needs to own the secret. Because when we do, it frees us from control of our story in our life, in our own name. And it allows us to say, God, if everything's yours and you care for me like a loving father, then you can do something amazing. And I'm going to trust you. This is what it means to redeem the ordinary, is that these areas of conflict in our life, often we come to a place where we have to decide, God, are you really in charge? Is this really all yours? And if it is, then I can trust you in the middle of it. I'm going to let you redeem the story, the issue, the conflict, the fear, the isolation, the anxiety. You can redeem it. It's all yours. And sometimes we have to give it back to God. So I don't know where you are today. I don't know what journey you're in. I don't know what circumstance you're facing. I don't know what kind of stress you're under. But the invitation that you have today is to be someone who says, God, it's all yours. To declare it, because it already is his. And then see what he can do within it. So the next time somebody says, hey, I have an awkward conversation, or I'm frustrated with you, or you're in a spot, I want you to be someone who says, I'm going to pursue peace. I'm going to elevate the person and not make them an adversary, but say, what do you want to do? How do we overcome this together? How can we come with a winning solution for both of us? And I'm actually going to give up some of my rights, just like Jesus did, so that you can find success too. I'm going to have an abundance mentality. I'm going to realize that God can tell the story a lot of different ways. I'm not going to have to define the way it looks. I'm going to say, God, you are ultimately in charge. I'm going to trust you with it. And even though it may not look like I'm winning at the beginning, God, ultimately, you have my good in mind, and I'm going to trust you with it. And then lastly, we can say, God, I'm going to pursue you rather than this stuff. This stuff ultimately won't satisfy me, but you will. So I'm going to trust you with it. Why? Because you know what's best for me. And I saw that in my relationship with Jason. I'm going to go back to the story in the beginning where I was like, hey, listen, I've got this awkward situation. My friend took this other position, now he wants it back, and now I don't know if there's enough for both of us. I remember as a very young man being absolutely at a loss as to what to do. So what I did is I went and talked to Jason. It was a really great step, right? And I said, what do you want to do? Do you want this job back? And he said, let's just roll with it. And what we did is we co-led that summer. It was a completely different paradigm. And looking back, that was one of the best summers of my life. We went on a mission trip together, led all the youth group down to the Dominican Republic, managed to keep everybody alive. One of the kids accidentally stabbed himself. That was a whole story, right? We were like, it was a crazy summer. We served children in the community. We went and had some of the best parties I've ever been a part of in youth ministry. And today, Jason and I are still friends. In fact, I was messaging him this week about some stuff and just sharing our hearts together. And he was just like, man, it's amazing what God can do through two knuckleheads. He invited me to go speak at a retreat for him. I've been hoping to bring him down here to speak at a retreat for us. What I found is that the relationship really matters, and God can redeem the hardest points of our life. Sometimes the biggest crises that we may feel, God is actually doing something to create something beautiful with them. And so I don't know where you are today, but I think the big step is to say, God, it's all yours. Because what may feel like a moment where we have no control right now might be the beginning of something more beautiful than we can imagine. But we need to let God redeem the moment. Why? Because Jesus is the one who models this, right? Let's look to Jesus. What did Jesus do? He saw the world as a place that God had created, perfect. We sinned. We sought God's stuff more than we sought God. We pursued earth instead of heaven. But Jesus pursued peace by coming among us and giving himself for us. He humbled himself, went to the cross for us. And he has made a place for us at the table. I can't imagine more of an abundance mentality than what God has. God says, I'm going to make a space for people who are my enemies to now be my children. Think about that. There's a place at the table for you. You are now co-heirs. Think about the word co-heir. So Jesus is the heir to everything. It means that he gets everything that's God's. You are in Christ now his co-heir. God's like, you also have the position of an heir of God. And what he's calling you to do is he's calling you to pursue God instead of earth. So how are you doing with that today? As we close, I just want to ask you the question, how are you doing with this? In a very practical way, I want you to identify one area, because like we can't do all of them today. Consider one area where you're saying, I'm pursuing earth more than heaven. I'm not pursuing peace. I'm pursuing control. I don't have an abundance mentality in this area. I've got very much of a win-lose mentality in this area. Just I think of one area. And as we close, I want you to take a courageous step and trust God with it. It might be your relationship, you're dating somebody, and you're just like, I just don't have a whole lot of control with this. We're in conflict a lot. You're going to trust God with it. Maybe it's a job-related thing, and you don't know what to do with it. Maybe it's a personal issue you're carrying today. Maybe it's a season of just anxiety or depression. I don't know what it is, but I want you to think about it right now as we go through a time of response and just say, God is yours. So we're going to do that. Josh and the team, they're going to just lead us in a moment of reflection. So what I'd like to do, I'm calling an audible here. Can we just make a space right now? We'll just take a moment of just some music and just a moment of quiet. And as we start Holy Week this week, that we would just be still and say, am I pursuing heaven or earth? Just be still. Think about that one area that God, the Holy Spirit, put on your mind and your heart, and then just trust him with it. Just make space for that right now. We have the time. There's no time like right now for it. I would hate for you to walk out of this room without trusting that moment, that conflict to God. Declare that you are enough. And God, we know deep down within us that there is a deep hunger for acceptance and satisfaction. And we rage against things that hold us back from it. God, would you just free us from the rage? Free us from the overwhelming, crippling anxiety. Would you reorient us towards heaven, towards Jesus? Would you allow us to trade control for peace? And give us freedom right now. I just want to name it right now. Jesus, would you just give us freedom? Freedom. Just point ourselves to you. Would you save us from our hope in ourselves and our stuff and our talent, and put our hope fully on you, Jesus? So we surrender this thing that we're carrying to you right now. It's in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Gospel Church Podcast. Before you go, please hit subscribe. And if you want to give to support the mission, please hit the link in the description. We'll see you next week.